Blog Talk Radio.
Looking back when I was small, to memories when snowflakes fall, with mom and dad and I'm blessed, for one day isn't me.
I give to you,
and you give to me,
true love.
All righty, we're back for Season 5, Episode 10 of The Hollywood Connection. I'm the host of the most, Jimmy Falcon, my special guest co-host and the host, well, the co-host of Night Moves Radio, Ariana Cherry's here, and our special guest, Larry Hankin. What's going on, Larry?
Well, I guess everything is going on, but I'm not involved in it. I don't know. I'm just trying to get along right now.
Well, I know.
Although actually something happened just today, about an hour ago, and I can't tell you about it, but it's big. I got a part in a movie, and the movie it's a big movie, but it's a non-disclosure movie. I'm not allowed to talk about it until they release it. So that's what's going on. I just got a nice job an hour ago.
Well,
other than that,
I'm gonna say I understand that. You know, with talking to actors, there's gonna be non-disclosure agreements. They don't want the stuff getting out before they want it to get out. That's understandable.
Yeah.
But congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. They kept me on the hook for about 2 months, and then so it finally came through. So thank you very much. I'm going to enjoy it.
And I know we've talked many times, but I'd like to introduce you to my friend Ariana. She is the co-host of Night Moves Radio here on the Cloverleaf Radio Network, and she's co-hosting with me today.
Okay. Hi, Ariana. How you doing?
Are you there?
I can't hear.
Yeah, I'm here. How
are
you doing?
Oh, there you are.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Hello.
Go ahead, Ariana. I hear you now.
Oh, I'm fine. I just said hi. How are you guys doing?
Oh, okay. It's very, very low. But that's okay. I can hear you.
We are doing good,
up
I guess.
Loud.
Oh, there we go. Now I hear you. You have arrived.
Yeah, I literally just got off work a little bit ago. I was practicing the piano after work.
Cool. What were you playing?
A song that
I
wrote.
Oh, cool.
I was practicing a song that I wrote, so I've just been going over some stuff.
What are you going to do with it once you practice?
Well, I work in a church. Besides doing podcasting, so I plan to copyright it, and I'd like to hand it over to the Praise Band and see if they'd like to try to play it. Then I'd like to record it.
Cool.
And put it online somewhere. I don't know yet.
That's good. That's good. That's a good plan. Sounds okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do that next. I'm gonna write a song and get it published. Meanwhile. Yeah, I'm not doing much. I just closed my show, you know, the one-man show. So I basically, because of when you're calling me now in the end of October here, kind of the end of the year, because Hollywood kind of shuts down for the whole month of December. I mean, they're all working on, in a couple of days, they're all going to be working on Thanksgiving dinners, as everybody is going to be working on Thanksgiving dinners and then Christmas shopping and stuff. So this is kind of for for anyone, for people in my business, in the show business, it's kind of the end of the year. So this radio interview is kind of a summing up of what I did for the whole year. I wasn't even looking forward to working. I'm going to be working in December. December and January. That's when the shooting is going to be. So I wasn't planning on working at all. I figured I was finished for the year. You know, I did a whole bunch of things this year, and now I'm about to rest, and I got this job. So that's cool. You know, can't complain.
Well, you've been relevant for a long time. I mean, your approach to the comedy that you put into the films and the approach to the characters that you put into the films is something that keeps audiences coming back for more. So I think you're going to have those pouring in as long as you continue to act.
Hopefully. I would like to do my own stuff now. That's my next project is getting my own stuff out there. Because, you know, while I work on these movies, right afterwards, I take that money and I just make a movie or something. I do something with it that, you know, is kind of creative besides, you know, getting small toys. You know, got to do that just to keep yourself sane. But basically, I'm gearing up to either write basically a sitcom. I don't know. Maybe a movie or a sitcom. I don't know which. That's still percolating, but I got to get the idea first, and that I was going to do on my vacation, on my Christmas vacation. I'm leading up to it, you know, just try to think. So we'll see. We'll just see.
Well, that's nice. I think everybody needs, especially in Hollywood, you guys need some time to have off. There's stuff you need to do in your personal lives that you want to do, whether it be trips or projects or you want to do your own stuff, so I definitely agree that time off is much needed.
Yeah, I haven't taken any time off in maybe 2 years, I think. I haven't had a vacation. I mean, I've had time off, which is time between movies, but that's not a vacation to me. That's
true.
You're looking for the next job, or I'm working on a project of my own in between jobs. I'm kind of, a fanatic about that.
Well, I know one of the characters you've been working on for some years now is Emmett Demas. And I wanted to know how you came up with this character, why you decided to even get into doing your own movies, because I'm sure that's a completely different realm than doing the acting.
Well, actually, it was a very premeditated creative process. It wasn't about Emmett. It was about me and women actresses who are working and want to work over the age of 35 to 40. There was many years ago. This is about 10 years ago. Or even longer. I was listening to something about show business. And there was a fact that they said that it's very hard for even famous actresses, you know, big name actresses, to get jobs after they're 40 because movies are geared to, or at least starring people, are geared to about people under 40. Hollywood is based on people under 40, and more it's under 30 and around 20. But it just keeps on getting lower and lower, I guess because younger people have more and more money that's disposable, and older people don't. So they just gear it to the people who are going to buy movie stuff. Anyway, the article said that all these stars, and they named a lot of famous actresses, who couldn't get work as leading actresses anymore, and they were confined to doing moms on TV, you know, and sitcoms. And I thought, holy cow, that probably applies to men, too. And I was around I don't know. Well, it was a long time ago. It was even longer. I was about 30 or 35 when that happened, so it was longer than 10 years ago. But I started thinking, okay, what happens when I become 45 or 50? Guys got a little older age to star in movies, and then they're dumped. And so it was really rampant at that time. Now I guess, you know, older people have, they don't have the money, but they have the demographics. There's like so many of them. So that you can be a leading man much older now. But back then, no. So I decided to invent a character that I could act when I was older. And I came up with Emmett. It started out, I tried to figure out who is famous, what kind of character. And I thought, okay, Don Quixote. He was a funny, famous character. So that's who Emmett is based on, really. That's why he rides a motorcycle, this funky old motorcycle. So that's how that came about. I thought, okay, if I invented a character who's about 55, 50, anywhere with white hair, as long as he has white hair, I'm going to invent him now and start writing him now. This is back when I was 30, 35. By the time I have white hair, I'll have something together, and that's what happened. And when I finally, my hair started to get gray, sure enough, the job started to stop. And so I started to work on Emmett, and made those three Emmett movies, the Outlaw Emmett Demas, you know, that was distributed all over the world. So then I had white hair, and jobs started to come back again, but not as big as when my hair was black, and really, or dark brown. But that's really strange as to how this business works. The color of your hair, that's weird. I mean, you know, usually it's your health or your, well, age, I guess, has to do with color of your hair. But it's the color of your hair. Not you could be 50, and if you have black hair, you're going to work. Because you can lie about your age. But if you have white hair and you're 23, you're done. I mean, in this business, I don't know. Anyway, that's where it came from, that fear of not working when I was older. And it's kind of coming true in that I think I have people who've seen it or want to see more of him, Emmett. So I might be working with Emmett next year. So that's kind of the plan.
Well, I'm sure that's awesome, too, getting to work with your own character and doing all that stuff yourself, as you can put so much more into it. You don't have to go through all these other parties or just read from a script. You can make the script. You can make Emmett do whatever you feel.
Yeah, I mean, the privilege comes. I mean, the nugget in there for me is... Yeah, I'll be work. I can work. It will enable me to work as I grow older. So that's one part of it. But the other part is, and the secret that I really hold dear is, if I write the script, I don't have to say these words that are on this page. I can say different words. That, to me, is the greatest privilege an actor has. And when I first started, because I come from improv theater, I come from Second City, you know, always
right.
Make up your words. So, you know, when I would say, hey, you know, I have a better line here. Well, you know, my ego. Yeah, I have a better line here. Can I say that? And when I started acting, you know, in films, no, just say it as written. And it was really hard for me, you know, because I'm not used to memorizing lines. I spent 10 years improvising. I never memorized a line in 10 years. Oh, maybe a scene or two. But then it wasn't in my bag, you know. So, but then the biggest perk I got as a working actor was one day I said, hey, do I have to say it this way? And the director said, no. So what do you want to say? I told him, he said, well, say that. And I thought, wow, I've made a big step upwards. That, to me, is the two things about acting that really counts. And the other thing is the truth, you know, just be yourself, you know. But the thing I had to learn was, you know, you've got to establish yourself really early, because your longevity in this business is not due to your health. It's due to how you look, or your hair, your age, you know, and your ability to say the lines the way you want to, which I know a lot of, they love not having to make up words. They love memorizing words. It's safe. It's less work. And I understand that. It's just not me. You know, I'm
right.
Like I say, 10 years of improvising, and then 3 years before that of being a stand-up comic. You know, and I was opening for like Woody Allen, and I would just get up and say what was on my mind, you know, and that was pretty cool. I mean, you hone it, of course. You know, just get up there and blab. You hone it, you know, you work on it. But it was right. My words, and I could forget something. I could forget a line, and nobody said anything. I could say it differently, and nobody said anything. So that's how I look at acting, because frankly, I've never wanted to be an actor. I just fell into it, and I found out through luck that I was good at it. And so I said, okay, cool. I also liked it. But it was never in my head, ever. You know, in high school or in college, it never occurred to me to be an actor. I just didn't want to be anything, frankly. you know, what do you want to be? I don't know. I just wouldn't even dwell on it. You know, what do you want to do, Larry? I don't know. And I just kept going like that until I met Carl Gottlieb. Carl wrote Jaws. He wrote a lot of movies, but Carl wrote Jaws. And we were friends in college. We got along great because we just hated everything about it. And he was even, he was hung in effigy. I really admired him for that. The football team. The Syracuse football team and the marching band of Syracuse University hung Carl Gottlieb in effigy from a lamppost on campus because he didn't like the marching band, and he thought the football team was okay. We had Jim Brown, and Jim Brown was in on our football team. He didn't have anything against Jim, but the football team and marching band, he really, and he was a writer. He still is a writer. But he was a writer for the Daily Orange, which is a newspaper. So he'd always write these articles every week during, you know, football season about how bad the band was and how wishy-washy the football team was. And so one day we found him hanging an effigy, a dummy, from really far out. But anyway, Carl was my roommate when we graduated, and so he became a movie reviewer, and I was his roommate. He supported me for about a year, and then I was going to all these coffee houses. We lived in Greenwich Village, in a walk-up in Greenwich Village. So I would go to these coffee houses while he was at work. I was starving. I was washing, sweeping floors and bars and stuff, and I said, wait, I can do that. You know, these people would get up, you know, Monday night, open mic. And I would get on, just get up. And I was really bad. I mean, really bad. But the amazing thing was that it never occurred to me that I was bad, which I guess is how you succeed. I just kept on doing it until I got good. I mean, it never occurred to me to stop. You know, it's not working. No, I would the increments, I guess, is what kept me going. You know, like, oh, I got a laugh this week on that joke that I thought was funny. I just wasn't saying it right. I got it. So, that was an improvement. Okay. So I would look forward to telling that one joke in my little, you know, set of, 10 minutes or something. And I got better till finally I was opening for Woody Allen and Miles Davis. So,
wow.
So stick with it. Yeah, stick with it. That's all I can tell you. Because I was really bad, you know. I have recordings of, you know, my first stuff. It wasn't funny. It, basically, I guess that's what's being bad about being a comedian. You're not funny. It's not that you're an evil person. You're just not funny. But I kept on going. So, I thank Carl for it. But, and that's how I got to become an actor. I was starting to get, I was working the clubs with, Lenny Bruce and Richie Pryor, and Lenny Bruce was coming to the end and Richie Pryor was just coming up. And I thought, yeah, those two guys, I like them. So I want to be like them. And so, yeah, but there's a cost to that because people really boo you and come at you with beer bottles in their hands and saying, get off the stage and police stop you. That was a trip. That was the most fun of being in show business, is the cops and the beer bottles and the bouncers. But I was doing Richie Pryor, Lenny Bruce stuff, you know. And so finally I got tired of just the struggle of, you know, are they going to love me tonight? Because I had good audiences, or are they going to hate me tonight? If I was with Woody Allen, I got laughs. If I was opening for Miles Davis, I got laughs. If I was opening for a marijuana crowd, what's that? Do you hear that?
Ariana's texting, I think.
Yeah. Oh well. Anyway, So I decided to join Second City. Which my manager told me that would be good because you could do whatever you want and, you know, be as far out and you could curse and do marijuana jokes and drug jokes. And you got five other people on the stage and you're in the theater and, you know, it's not a struggle. So that's what I did. I joined Second City. And from that, I just got acting jobs. You know, just that simple. And so there I was memorizing stuff, you know. Wow, how did I get here? So I started to think, well, maybe I'll just write my own stuff. And here I am talking to you.
Very cool. Ariana, do you have a question? Poor thing, you have been so quiet.
Is she even there?
I think she hung up. I'm sorry. Oh, wow. Maybe she lost the call. But, yeah, I did want to touch on Escape from Alcatraz. Was a great film that you were a part of. And I thought it was pretty neat that the character you played, Charlie Butts, based on Alan Clayton West, the only person that seemed to have survived that escape, which I thought was pretty neat. What are your memories of working on that film?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. There was the scuttlebutt going around as to who really did survive and who got away and what was the real story. I mean, that was pretty much all the talk of the major actors, even Clint Eastwood. We would talk about it, about, you know, who got away and blah, blah, blah. But I think nobody did. I mean, so that was the discussion there. And then it was kind of agreed by the end of the movie that, and I think research has shown that they all drowned pretty much.
Wow.
They did experiments with the tide at that hour of that night and at what time they escaped and got on the raft. And the current at that hour was going out under the bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, and they couldn't have fought the current. The current wouldn't have allowed them to get to land, the other side, I think they were heading towards Sausalito, not San Francisco. They were heading towards the other shore. And then there was a boat that said they saw a body in the water in a blue, dressed in blue, and that's what they were wearing at the time. So,
wow.
So there's that. And then there was, you know, I'm just hanging out with Don Siegel, who directed it, who was a great, he's gone now, but he was a great director from the 50s. He directed all the big, famous movie stars from the 40s and the 50s. And so I would hang around with him, but basically, I was so naive. I guess I still am. I don't know if you've outgrown naivety. But I was so naive that he would be putting me on all the time. That was, I got used to it, and I realized that it was because he really liked me. I mean, he would lie to me like crazy about what was happening, what I had to do or what was going to be next or, you know, about the movie and stuff like that. But he was also trying to teach me acting, movie acting. He was teaching me movie acting and directing, because I would always stand next to him when he was directing. So he would say, well, I would ask him, why'd you do that? He'd go, well, probably. Or sometimes he would say, I don't know. I don't know why I did it. You know, I'll probably get fired. Wow. I mean, he just, if he saw that I was open to some lie, he would give it to me right between the eyes. But he was a dear old man he wasn't old then. He was kind of elderly, white-haired guy. But he was great. I mean, and he was a good director. He knew what the hell was going on, man. He was just, So there was hanging out with Don, and then just seeing such a major motion. It was the first major motion picture I'd ever been in. I mean, and we were shooting on Alcatraz, and then there was a fight with the with the people who the tour guides on Alcatraz. The only way that we could, this is what I heard, that the only way that I think it was Paramount Studios or Warner Brothers, whatever, could shoot on Alcatraz, because the National Monument or something national. The only way they could were allowed to shoot would be if they would allow, if Warner Brothers, if the movie people would allow the tours to not stop the tours. So in other words, if we were shooting on Tier C and the tour came through wanting to look at Tier C, we had to stop, get out of the way, and let them come through. So it was in the middle of the scene. It was, okay, stop, tour. And then they'd come through. And so they didn't like us because of that, because they considered we were in their way. We considered that they were in our way. So there was a lot of tension. And then when the tour people who were on the tour, when they heard about, they were shooting Escape from Alcatraz, they're, whoa, what's that?
Just ignore that. Yeah, that's we're the only people that can. It actually doesn't go out. It's just ignore it. We're not going to get hung up on or anything. You're fine.
So the tension was that when the people on the tour started asking not to see Dillinger's cell, but to see Clint Eastwood's cell, the tour guide people got really pissed because they considered Clint Eastwood ruining the whole point of Alcatraz. They came to see the cell that Clint Eastwood was in, like it was a movie set. He had turned Alcatraz into an official movie set, and they were pissed. So they would interrupt us in any way possible. So it was near the end of the shoot, it got kind of weird. So there was that going on. So there's a lot of different, and then there was me and acting. And there was me in acting where I had a crying scene. And
wow.
I don't know how to cry. I mean, I can cry, but it has to be caused. and there has to be some reason for it. So Don Siegel came up to me. And by the way, there was so many people and so many people on the crew that there were card games going on all the time. If you weren't working, you were playing cards. So there were so many people and so many things, and there was hundreds of cast members, extras so that there was a card game going on all the time. So I was in a card game because I wasn't working. I was in a card game, and I suddenly realized somebody's behind me, and it was Don Siegel, and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, I'm playing cards. And he said, "You know, you got to cry in 2 hours."
Mm.
I go, "Yeah." And he said, "Are you ready? This is your big scene." I go, "Yeah, I guess. I mean, I wasn't thinking about it." And he says, "Well, I think you better think about it because you got to cry in 2 hours. You think you can cry?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Well, you better go into your dressing room and start preparing." And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on? This is crazy. That's the craziest direction I've ever had. And meanwhile, the guy's playing cards. I was playing with his crew, not other actors. I was playing. So they kind of put down their cards and they're listening to this. And nobody, yeah, it's kind of ordinary. They're just listening. And I said, okay. So I said, I'm leaving the card game. I'm going into my dress room. I'm going to practice. Just to get this thing out of my hair. I go into my dressing room, and I said, "Well, let me see if I can cry." And I couldn't. I didn't have the technique or whatever it was. So I come out of my dressing room, and I find him, and I go, "Hey, Don, listen, I don't think my character would cry in this scene." He goes, "Really, why?" I go, "Well, you know, I mean, because of this, you know, the thing that's happening before. I mean, I was in this, and I was in that, and I didn't cry then, and, and I would be beat up if I would be crying in Alcatraz." And he cries, and he listens very intently to my plea. And he calls over his assistant, who was a young woman about, about 25, 27. His assistant, she's really smart. He says, "Hey, Barbara, come over here." I'm so, "Yeah, what do you want?" He said, "I want you to listen to Larry here. Larry, tell Barbara what you just told me about that crying thing." So I don't know what's going on, and she doesn't know what's going on, so I do the whole story about crying and my character wouldn't and this and that and whatever, and I'm finished, and she goes, she's puzzled, I'm puzzled, and he looks at her and he says, and then he looks at me and he goes, "I've got a movie here," and he gestures in the air, this big arc, you know, from one side of his body to the other, up in the air, this big arc. And he says, "See this movie? It's all guys. It's nothing but testosterone." And he says, "I need some other feeling. I need some feeling." And he points to a spot in the sky in this arc, about three quarters of the way through the arc, in the air. He's pointing up in the air at nothing. He says, "Right here. Right here, I need another emotion. I need somebody to cry. Guess who's right there? You. You're going to cry. You got a half hour. Get on it." And he walked away. And I thought, that was so cool. I mean, he just put me on and put me down at the same time. So now I'm really scared because, again, I'm naive. And I'm thinking, holy cow, this is really important. I'm going to get fired. And because I knew, by the way, somebody had gotten fired about 4 days before. So I knew that it had happened. So I knew it's possible. So I try to go into my dressing room, slapping myself, nothing's working. So I finally just give up and I say, okay, fuck it. You know, let's just do it. I get the call, you're on. And so he says to me, Don says, "Well, ready to cry, Larry?" And I go, "Well, I'm going to give it a shot, you know." He says, "Okay, let's go." He says, "By the way, this is going to be a close-up on you. If you look in the movie, it's a big fucking close-up. It's like from my neck up. It's a close-up." So he says, "Okay, you know." So the camera is staring in my face. The camera is about, I don't know, 12 inches from my face. And I'm sitting in my cell. He says, "Okay, you ready? Larry, you ready to cry?" "Yeah." "Okay, roll it." So I give it my best shot. I'm sitting there going, nothing. He goes, "Cut. Clinton, come here." And this guy, Clinton, he's a crew member, big, heavy set guy, must have been about 55, 60 years old, comes over with a bottle. And he says, "Okay, we're going to roll it again, Larry." "Okay, and roll it." And then Clinton has this bottle and there's liquid in it, and he's got a, you know, like those perfume bottle sprayers, you know, where you squeeze the top, the old-fashioned ones? That's what it was. He had a bottle with that squeezer on the top.
Like an atomizer.
An atomizer, exactly. And he comes over, and I said, what's this? And he says, wintergreen, roll it. And he just squirts the spray of wintergreen into my eyes. Very fine spray. And my eyes start to tear like hell, man. I just, cut. And then Don comes over and he goes, that was terrific, Larry. Good deal. Moving on. And that was it. And he knew. Don knew all along that that's what was going to happen. From back to me playing cards. He, fucking guy, man. But, I mean, you can't, he's such a great director that, you know, I just, I don't know. I think that's, I've worked with a lot of directors. I mean, a really lot of bad ones and great ones. And the great ones are very few. And the great ones just say something to you, and that's it. I mean, they don't tell you. I mean, he knew that I couldn't cry or it wasn't necessary for me to cry, Don Siegel. And he knew that they had wintergreen and they were going to blow up my face. So he said, let's put Larry on. And cool, that was great. But he also, there was also other things that he did which were fantastic. And great actors, great directors, like who? Like Larry David. He doesn't direct his shows, but he's the director. If something goes wrong, he'll correct it. So when I was doing Seinfeld, he came over to me and he said, I know what you're trying to do. I was doing that character. I forget his name. My name was Tom, but I was working with the bald guy. And so he says, I know. So Larry says, cut, I want to talk to Larry. So he comes over to me, he says, I know what you're trying to do. I go, with a chip on my shoulder, yeah, what am I trying to do? He said, you're trying to do nothing. Now, what I had in my mind for that character was Buster Keaton, and he was right. I was trying to do nothing. I was trying to be blank. Just, that's it, zero. And I said, wow, yeah, you're right. And he goes, well, you're doing something. And he walked away. That's probably the greatest piece of direction I've ever got. He just walked away. So then they do the scene again, you know, and I got this in my mind. I'm thinking, okay, good direction. I'm going to follow that one. And he goes, all right, cut. I want to talk to Larry. No. What he did was we do the scene, and I do it like, you know, I got to stop doing something. And I see Larry David across the room heading towards me, but fast. So I'm figuring he's not going to talk to me. He, you know, because generally you just walk over to somebody and give them the direction. No, I think he's going to pass me by. So I'm not paying any attention to him. And as he passes me by and he brushes my shoulder real fast. And as he goes by, he says, and he keeps on walking. Cool. That's you know, that's the kind of director I want to work for. Anyway, that's my Alcatraz story. Put a little sidetrack to Seinfeld.
Well, I was kind of thinking it wouldn't have been, you know, it was a prison, so it wouldn't be prison without frequent interruptions and lots of BS. So I think you're in the right spot. But we are out of time. I don't want us to get hung up on. Thank you so very much, Larry, for joining us. And sorry about the confusion last time. And sorry you had laptop issues as well.
Oh, no sweat at all. The laptop issue is there. And by the way, I'd like to thank you for getting all those pictures. That was an amazing job, you know, that for the ad for the show. All those pictures. That's just amazing. Who did that? You?
Yeah, I did that, and I had
That's
a lot
amazing,
more I wanted
man.
To put on there, too, but I just didn't have the room because you've been in so much.
Holy cow. That was very impressive. That was really impressive. That was like being able to cry in a scene. That was amazing. So cool. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's no problem, Larry. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great night.
Okay, you too, man. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, I don't know what happened to Ariana. I went to kick it to her for a question, and she was gone.
Yeah, maybe her connection was gone or something like that, or you know.
Possibly. But
right.
I know.
Stay in touch, man.
Yeah, absolutely, Larry.
When will this go on, or has it been on?
Well, it went live, and it goes into the archives in about 15 minutes.
Will it play again so I can listen to
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I can send you the link, yes.
Oh, yeah, cool. Okay, talk to you later, man.
Yep, have a good one.
Keep on. Okay, bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, everybody, we'll be back tomorrow with artist Candace Colleri joining us at head of the 2018 Artistry and Horror Con, which is coming up November 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Garden Hotel in Urbana, Illinois, dhhcon.com or Dark History and Horror Con on Facebook for details. November 2nd, we welcome actress, model, and producer Max Wassa for her work in Porky, Scarface, My Stepmother's Alien, and so much more. And, of course, November 10th is the Hollywood Connection. Season 5, Episode 11, Jane Parksmith will be joining us again. So big thanks to Larry Hank and Ariana Cherry. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.